This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
A very good morning to everybody on the road and in their homes and even in their bed. It is the 8th of November 2018. I am Khoo Soo Chong, joined by Joyce Goh. We are both from Penang, and that can only be a good thing.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning, good morning. So at this time of morning, normally we do some news wrap-up. Mm-hmm. The kind of stuff that happened while you were asleep, as Sharad Kutan used to say. But they always used to do the foreign news, Joyce, and so I decided to do some local news because the local news is what matters to all of us as Malaysians, right?
Mm.
And let's start with something not so happy, I guess, but it's interesting to note because this is the festival time. It's Deepavali yesterday. We've got Christmas and Raya and Chinese New Year coming up, and we do a lot of driving on the road. So this guy in Singapore, I think his name is Pei Boon Wee, 48 years old, Malaysian guy, fined 10,000 Singapore dollars in Singapore for driving under the influence of a lack of sleep because he was driving for a long time, didn't... I guess he didn't bother to rest or didn't bother to stop by the side of the road to catch some wings. It resulted in a crash, and I think his mum passed away in the crash, and he had a couple of young kids in the back who were not even wearing seatbelts. So as parents ourselves, both of us, must be quite distressing to read that, you know, things like this still happen in this day and age.
Yeah, it is that his father and his niece were also injured in the accident. And Pei Boon Wee, he's 48. He was, as you mentioned, Chuang fined $10,000, and he admitted to causing this accident by driving in a negligent manner. And his niece cannot be named because she's a minor, but all four of them in the car are Malaysians.
Yeah, we do spend a lot of time on the road, right? So festival time, I guess, to just be very careful, especially now it's rainy season, and sometimes the visibility can be quite bad. Another item also, which relates to us, I guess, Joyce, because, you know, we did have a Formula One race. I think this year was the last one. So I think the Southeast Asian calendar has been taken over by Vietnam.
Mm.
And I don't know, you know, when we hosted our first race in 1999, it was kind of like Malaysia's, you know, arrival on the world stage.
It's like a big deal.
It was a bit like a big deal. Mm-hmm. Did you ever go to those races?
No, actually, no. Have you been?
Yeah. It's fantastic.
Is it good?
It's okay. Very, very hot. There's no tree cover at all. And very, very noisy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but I think, have you been to the Singapore one? That's the night race?
I've never been, but apparently people say it's amazing.
Yes, I heard it's amazing. And the networking parties that they have.
Oh, really?
There. Yeah, and the concerts and all that. It's not as hot because it's night. It's at night, but they have these kind of like, you know, you have the boxes, the corporate boxes and all that. And I hear bankers telling me that, you know, who's who, even from Malaysia.
The who's who from Malaysia
are in Singapore for the race, and it's a good networking session. It's a good place to do deals and meet new people.
Why didn't Malaysia ever pull its finger out and do those things?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in Singapore, it's like a party before, party
exactly.
during, party after. So like it's like a 2-week swing.
Yes,
right?
And the concert, the people who actually go there to have a concert are big names.
Yeah, so yeah. It's not about the race, it's about the concerts and the parties.
Yeah, correct.
Terrible, huh? Anyway, also this other item as well. I don't know whether you saw this, Joyce, but it's the fact that the chairman of 1MDB said that it's he feels really bad that they took, what, $600 million in fees from the Malaysian government.
The chairman of Goldman Sachs.
Goldman Sachs,
yeah.
David Solomon, mm-hmm. right? So then, of course, Guadeng, being the, you know, for want of a better racial stereotype, said, I'm not saying on air, right? He said, give us back the money, la.
He has a point.
He's got a point.
Yeah, he has a point.
You admit to taking money badly from us, you know, illegally. I think the case is going to be ongoing soon. Just return us the money.
This is about, he's saying, about
$588 million. Yeah.
US dollars, not just ringgit, US dollars. So it's what, close to about 2 billion ringgit?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, mispriced bonds and, you know, really dodgy fees, and give us back the money.
I agree, Guaning.
Yeah. Say that to Penang at the Okay, we'll be back in a few more minutes. 6:04 in the morning, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was The Valley Road by Bruce Hornsby and The Range. And not since The Doors with a piano used to such great effect in a rock song. Okay, Joyce, when was the last time you went travelling?
Recently, we went. I brought the kids to Legoland for the weekend.
Okay, so you are a lot younger than I am, but there's this thing going on, right? There's this thing going on called, FOMO?
FOMO, fear of missing out.
Do you suffer from that disease?
Some of it, yes, especially with my friends, especially when I don't have enough time and you don't catch up with your friends, but you still have to juggle the kids and the job and everything.
Yeah.
So sometimes you have that and you try to for me, I try to stretch out my day because, we start the day so early and when it comes to the weekend, sometimes I don't want to sleep that early because the fear of missing out.
Because you spend the money to go there already, so must maximize life.
No, you're up. For me, it's more of that time, that you have. I'm trying to maximize the time to catch up with family, to catch up with friends. In the fear of missing out, in a way, that's me.
Yeah,
really? Do you suffer from that?
No, man. I don't. I didn't even know that thing existed. But I remember there was one time I was in New York, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is in the late 90s. Actually, this is the same time that Anwar Ibrahim was doing his reformasi speech at the local at the National Mosque, right? And I was down a junket with Lucent Technologies, and then I extended my trip by another 7 days, and I thought I should see New York City because I'm in New York City, right? So I did everything, the Empire State Building, I did all the the MoMA, etc. So I guess that was my version of FOMO in those days. But those things have changed. Now there's a thing called JOMO.
JOMO.
Which is not to be confused with the respected economist, K.S. JOMO. This is the joy of missing out. I don't know who comes out with these phrases. Is it Traveloka that comes out with these phrases? Or is it like Airbnb? FOMO la, JOMO la, LOMO la. What is all this?
Well, Chuang, this is JOMO, right? So apparently it's a new travel trend.
Yeah.
That, it's where you kind of switch off from the digital world and you kind of enjoy the
joy
moment.
Joy of missing out.
Yeah. So you enjoy the moment, you enjoy your time traveling, or you enjoy wherever you are instead of being online all the time.
I'm sure there's one slick marketer in, those travel agencies coming out with these new phrases to give you these new impetuses when you go traveling. First is LOMO. What's it?
FOMO.
First is FOMO. Then now is JOMO. Next thing is joy of doing nothing at all.
Well, this joy of missing out, in a way, I kind of get it because we're so online, we're so connected all the time, and it can be stressful. It can take up a lot of unnecessary. It might not even be necessary for you to be online, but you're online just because, right? So now this trend is for you to unwind, disconnect.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are more and more of these packages where they do digital detox.
I mean, you belong to a gym where there's the whole class dedicated to sleeping.
Oh, yeah, nap time, yeah.
Nap time,
I haven't attended a class, though.
I went to Perhentian once, and I saw this white fella, obviously a banker of some kind. He was one of those tall, blonde, a bit like Tim Leisner. In fact, it could have been Tim Leisner.
Is that Tim?
So this guy was on a catamaran. I saw him, literally on a catamaran, right? Sitting in the bay, he was on his BlackBerry, working.
Okay.
I was like, what the hell are you doing? You're supposed to be on holiday. You're on the Far East in this beautiful tropical island, and you're on your BlackBerry answering emails. Obviously, this guy is FOMO la.
But this is what happens, right? Because of technology, because of the smartphone, we're connected all the time.
Correct.
And even when it comes to work, you can't, even when you leave the office, you're still kind of on the clock. You're still kind of working because of technology. And also depending on what industry you're in. And this is why I can see this JOMO phenomenon or this digital detox. I can see that picking up among people today.
I can't wait to retire. I can't wait to retire and then ditch all my smartphones and all these devices. I can't wait to go back to analog. Do you know what I mean, right?
You don't think when you retire, you'll still be connected online?
I'd rather not. I want to cancel all my subscriptions except for my internet decision because you still want to check out sports news.
Yeah,
right?
You still have to be connected. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you can totally be disconnected. I don't know if that's possible. Yeah.
I already drive a 27-year-old car and I'm almost nearly 100 years old. So I can't wait to get rid of all these things.
Well, I can see, coming back to this article, what they're saying is that this Euromonitor Trends report points out the emergence of JOMO-friendly travel outfits like bespoke travel company Black Tomato, which helps travelers disconnect from their everyday lives. And then they drop them off remote secret locations, Chuang, and challenges them to find their way back to civilization.
So apparently, and I don't know whether you can agree with this, this Euromonitor study found that basically primarily Asian travelers are susceptible to JOMO rather than Western travelers. Do you get that? And do you know why? Is it a cultural thing?
Perhaps. Or maybe do you think in the Western world, they disconnect sometimes. I'm not sure. Do you think they disconnect sometimes? Asians are on their social media lot. I think it's
actually,
proven.
Asian people can't stop working, right? Seriously, a friend of mine who used to work for, like, was it like Estee Lauder in Hong Kong? You know, they're full on in Hong Kong, right? Mm-hmm. When he was seconded to France, Paris, right? And with his wife. And then obviously on Friday, 5 o'clock, all his colleagues all switched off their BlackBerries. He was shocked. He goes, how do you work? They don't touch their BlackBerries until Monday morning, 9 o'clock. And they just switched off for 2.5 days.
See, that's a good culture to
fantastic
have.
Culture. Mm-hmm. In Australia, they go surfing at 5, but between 9 and 5, they work like dogs. They eat the sushi in the office.
Correct. On the desk and all that. Efficient working.
So Asian for listening to Formula. Okay, back in a few more minutes. BFM 89.9, 6:20 in the morning. I'm Khoo Soo Chong, joined by Joyce Koh. And of course, that was the song called Do You Realize by the Flaming Lips. I'm not going to go into why this band is named the Flaming Lips, but it is what it is. Now, Joyce, you and I are both parents, right? Mm-hmm. And this item on the Malay Mail caught our attention. This lady called Ang Jun Meng, I think, Ao Jia Cheng. She's 25-year-old. She was charged at the magistrate's courts for leaving her 6-year-old kid alone in a house, locked from the outside at Jalan SS2227 Damansara Jaya at about 6:30 p.m. last October 7th, right?
Her six-year-old niece. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So she was charged under Section 33 of the Child Act 2001 and faces a maximum fine of 5,000 ringgit or imprisonment for up to 2 years or both if found guilty. Now, what do you think about this story?
For me, at what age actually is it safe to leave your kids at home alone, you know? And when do you actually allow your kids to be independent and go out by themselves? I think that's a question here. For me personally, I feel 6-year-old is too young.
Too young, lah.
Yeah, definitely too young. I think how this came about, this case came about was also because the neighbor heard the child crying and alerted the police. And that's how
And locked them outside. Okay, so that the child can obviously come out, lah.
Mm.
Okay. Mm. Now, I don't know. It's a tough one, okay? Because, I mean, for example, in the US, this is, and you know how Asian parenting and Western parenting very, very different,
yes,
right?
Yes, very different.
Western parenting, and I studied from abroad very early, right? In the West, you're expected to leave the house by 18.
Mm-hmm.
You're expected to literally leave the house.
Move out of the house
at 18.
Yes.
In Asia, children never leave the house. Yeah. I mean, you know, the more money you have, the more families get to stay in the house and it's the family house. I know people in Penang, they've got huge houses and there's like basically 3-4 generations living there, mm-hmm. right? Great grandmother all the way down. And in the US, of course, there's this thing called free range parenting, right?
It is basically a
type of parenting which allows the child to be more as independent as possible according to the physical and mental status of the child. And it's very much a case-by-case basis. Legislation in the US says that at 12 years old, if you're below 12 years old, you can't be left at home alone. Beyond that, you can.
Okay.
So it's kind of like an arbitrary legislation.
So 12 years old is that cutoff point?
Yeah.
Mm.
So actually, to be honest, you know, because I'm quite a bit of a banana, I'm more the free-range parenting kind. I'd like to make my kids to be as independent as possible.
Mm.
So like, for example, if we're in a restaurant, I'll let them go to the toilet alone.
Okay.
Right? If we're paying for some food, I'll give my child some money and get him or her to go and pay for the bill.
Your kids
so
are
as much,
10,
so 10 and 9.
And 9, okay, yeah.
So
this free-range parenting is the opposite of helicopter parenting. A lot of Asian
very
parents
micro,
do.
La.
Yeah, your helicopter parenting is where you're kind of there, kind of observing. You're kind of there near them, watching them, making sure everything is okay. To me, I think it's how old is the kid,
and how mature the child. Mm. But then you see, if you practice that kind of parenting from very early age, then your child becomes much more evolved mentally from a very early age, right? I think for me, the most famous example was Richard Branson. Have you read his book, Losing My Virginity?
No.
Okay, so when, you know, Richard Branson, right? His mum was a former British Airways stewardess,
mm-hmm.
very pretty, a beauty queen. I think his father was a stockbroker. But they practiced, I think in those days, their version of free-range parenting. Give the kids a lot of independence, ask their opinions all the time. I think at one time they went on a road trip, and I think Richard Branson was about five or six years old. And I think when they were about 2 or 3 kilometers from the family house, they let Richard Branson out of the car and said, okay, Richard, find your own way home.
Oh, okay.
Right? And it was a very formative experience for Branson.
Yeah, how old was he? For me, five or six years old. Okay, yeah. Okay. Well, I guess for me here is, yeah, it's good to encourage them to be independent. It's good to get them to, like you say, you know, when you're buying something to learn, you know,
yeah.
pass the money. Or maybe even in a restaurant, go up, walk up to the waiter to say, oh, excuse me, sir, can I please have the menu and things like that, to learn to be independent. But in this case, in this particular case, the woman is... I mean, she left the kid, 6-year-old kid, alone at home. Yeah. How safe is that? That's my question.
Correct,
and at
correct.
What age would be appropriate for a child to be left alone at home, or for a child to go out alone?
Yeah. So I guess this basically reflects Asian cultures, right? Asian families are very micro, very helicopter, and legislation tries to reflect that. But look at what Richard Branson did. He started Student Magazine when he was 18 years old. He's gone on to become a billionaire. And obviously not everybody's like Richard Branson.
Mm.
But I'd say, you know, he was very involved from a very early age. So I don't think there's a definitive answer to this question. It's really a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, I think for me, it's the to encourage independence is good. But for me, it's that safety factor that's very important. If it's safe, then that's fine. If it's not, then I'd rather not.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of parents out there. So tell us what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio, BFM89. 9.9. Anyway, there's been some feedback, Joyce, from our discussion earlier on parenting.
Yes.
One, I think, very concerned parent.
Yeah. So this parent, an anonymous parent, says that, you know, no, not in Malaysia, where we can let kids run freely and lose sight of them. You know, it's dangerous because we read stories about how kids can be stolen and later found in Thailand or, you know, and all that. So, you know, we have to be aware of this. So please don't let them do what happened with Richard Branson, what his parents allowed him to do.
No,
he said,
yeah.
So this parent is saying, not here in Malaysia.
No, this parent has got a point because like this is Asia, man. In Asia, scary things happen. So as parents, we have to keep on treading the line, that very fine line, right?
Mm.
Okay, so this is another story from the Singapore Straits Times. This is a company called Razer. Have you heard of it? It's like an esports company run by a guy called Tan Ming Liang. Now, in the wake of Budget 2019, where there's obviously some allocations to develop esports and gaming in the country, there was a guy, I think 10 million ringgit, was it?
Yeah, 10 million ringgit.
10 million ringgit in terms of allocation. And so Tan Ming Lian, in his Facebook post, basically said that, okay, if the Malaysian government's going to come in with 10 million ringgit, I'm going to come in with an equivalent amount and I'm going to invest this in Malaysia. And of course, he got a whole barrage of criticism from Singaporean people saying that, oh, why are you investing in Malaysia when you could be investing in Singapore, your home country? Now, this is really weird Malaysia-Singapore thing going on.
Yeah.
First of all, it's only, well, not to say only, but it's, you know, it's not 10 billion ringgit. And secondly, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats, don't you think?
Yeah, so the question here, Chuang, is whether or not is it unpatriotic to invest outside one's own country? In this case, you can see that the Singaporeans are all upset with Tan Ming Liang for standing by his 3.3 million Singaporean dollars commitment to the Malaysian esports industry. To me, I feel that at the end of the day, it boils down to whether or not it makes business sense for a business. Because if you're a CEO of a company, you will make the decisions for the company, for the betterment of your company. In this case, there must be reasons why this Razer CEO is making this commitment into this Malaysian esports industry. You know, and whether or not these Singaporeans are upset because of that and they see it as unpatriotic. I mean, they've got our Grab. Can I just put it out there, right?
No, you're right. Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And Grab, I think they made that move to Singapore because it made business sense for them, you know. So
I tell you that the flow of capital of companies from Malaysia to Singapore is so much greater than the flow of Singapore companies to Malaysia, because, you know, Singapore is what it is, probably number one and number two in the world in terms of doing business, in terms of infrastructure, amazing, in terms of you know, progressive business policies, amazing, right? But obviously, Tan Ming Lian sees something in Malaysia in terms of esports that, you know, that the Singapore government hasn't missed. Maybe because the Singapore government is so developed in so many areas that they haven't given as much space to esports gaming, but Malaysia is, right? I know, I've spoken to gaming developers, and some of the engineers that we've got here are amazing. They can speak, they're trilingual, they're integrated with, you know, with a community. They don't cost as much. The infrastructure is amazing, and government policies are amazing. of course, in terms of doing business, and you're right, as an entrepreneur, you do what is best for the business.
Yeah, it's for the company.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and perhaps this Tan Ming Liang sees a potential, let's say, in the esports industry here in Malaysia. Maybe in Singapore, they also have a business there, but it depends on what strategy he wants to implement and what he wants for his business.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, when Singaporeans, as you mentioned, I mean, many companies go, the flow of capital from Malaysia to Singapore,
absolutely,
the flow of brain drain from Malaysia to Singapore, it's a lot more than the other way around. And do you see us Malaysians complaining? I don't think so.
Well, obviously, this is a story which keeps on giving. Tell us what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio, BFM 89.9. Good morning. It is 6:51 a.m. It is, 8th of November 2018. We're just about a couple of months away from the end of the year. I'm, of course, Koo Soo Chung, joined by Joyce Goh. We're both from Penang, and that can only be a good thing to repeat myself twice in 1 hour. And because we're both from Penang, we know what it's like to have really good food, right?
Yes.
Now, and we also know that we just talked about one of our producers, and in fact, Serena Magdalene has just given me this incredulous stare. Yeah, it's true, right? We do know what this good food is like, right?
Good hawker food.
And we've
been
spoiled for choice since we were born. We've got good Indian food, masala food, Italian food, Chinese food, all kinds of food from all over the world. We are very cosmopolitan in that way. And that's why we've taken offense to the fact that in Singapore, they've asked UNESCO to recognize their street food as being of world-class standard. I'm like, hello, we were there first.
Exactly. And I think this story it's been talked about before, but this story came out again recently in the New York Times about how, you know, Singapore's claim as a street food hub, that has definitely riled up Malaysians. And I think they're going to make that actual, they're going to write in and submit that bid to UNESCO in March.
They're and they want it to be put on the cultural heritage list.
Yes.
So what this means is more tourist dollars, lah, basically, right? I mean, when you're given accreditation for something good by UNESCO, then obviously means you're very good at something. They've got 38,000 signatures, right? And this story came from the New York Times. Mm. So it must be true. You know, but have you been to a food court in Singapore? There are no cockroaches. There is no greasy floor.
There's the tissue paper to jom the table. You know, that's very Singaporean thing.
It's too sanitized. But, I mean, to be a really good hawker stall, you must have all kinds of germs and bacteria flying around.
Yeah, and their hawker food is Michelin starred. Do you know? Did you know that? That was So that was one of the pushbacks from the Singaporeans, just saying that, oh, you know, this discussion when it comes to whether or not they should get this UNESCO heritage award for hawker food, are you saying that, you know, perhaps this discussion can be carried out properly after a hawker stall in Malaysia achieves a Michelin star? Then we'll be on equal footing.
Where got street food become Michelin star?
Well, they have that in Singapore.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, Singapore has a lot of things. It's got a great casino. It's got great shopping. It's amazingly well planned. A great zoo. Amazingly well developed. I mean, I give Singapore a lot of credit for what it should be given credit for. But its food is not. I've yet to find a really good char kway teow place in Singapore or chicken rice, whatever
actually,
they may
chicken
think.
Chicken rice, I must say, is not bad.
No,
okay, I'm not
the,
bad.
The best is at Merlin Hotel, right? And that's like a 50-year-old establishment.
Mandarin. But I mean, I feel when it comes to hawker food, if I have to choose one in Singapore, it'll be chicken rice and that's it for me.
Yeah, so why do you think Singapore is doing this, right? It's the same reason why it wants to be known as this like a really risque place now, right? They've allowed, what is it, you know, those naked dancers from Paris, right? And they want to be known as a less than sanitized place now to get those kind of travelers, right?
But I think Singapore, when it comes to Singapore, they're very good at marketing themselves. Look at the movie Crazy Rich Asians. It was a full-on ad for Singapore. And you know, they're just really good.
For the wrong reasons.
And, no, but
like this, they're kneeling at the altar of like materialism, wrong thing.
No, but they're very good at advertising Singapore. Actually, a lot of the actors and actresses are Malaysians, but they're very good to like blow the trumpet and say, oh, this is in Singapore. You know, they're very good at packaging that. Packaging and selling that country. You know, it's an ad for the country. They're very good at marketing themselves.
We've got Lim Kwok Wing. He's the best marketer in humankind.
Yeah.
Not.
well, you know, and they're very clever to remember this whole, when it comes to nasi lemak, was it one of the dishes, hawker dishes, they're saying that it originated from Singapore first. They're very clever at marketing.
Yeah, and then putting the stake in the sand, right? Mm. I mean, but Penang, for some reason, has gotten the plaudits without any real marketing. Who marketed Penang? No one, right? It's just been doing the really good stuff for like a long, 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 long time. Mm. But I mean, earlier this year, I was all over the country. I was in KK, I was working lah. I was in KK, I was in Kuching, I was in Kuantan, I was in Malacca, I was in JB, I was in Ipoh. And all these places have got amazing, amazing food. And thanks to social media, now I guess you don't have the sanitized government slogan. It's, you know, basically it is the feedback of people and patrons that give you the plaudits. So to me, it rings false if it comes from Singapore government or the Singapore Tourism Authority, which says, oh, we're the world, we've been accredited by UNESCO as a... Okay. I don't believe them.
Okay, you know? So what you're
but
saying
But if I
is
see
that...
my buddy that's gone to some really good place in Singapore and had a really good meal, I'd say, yeah, okay. Credit where credit is due.
We have a feedback from Ramli Sirup, who says that Singaporean needs a signature dish rather than just 3 hours. Can I suggest kia soup? Kia soup. Do you get it?
Kia soup.
It's a good one. Good one.
Okay, something else from Kevin Young. Kevin Young, Michelin star is nothing but a few Westerners coming to some food. Exactly. It's a Western thing, yeah. Right? I want a matcha to tell me a good nasi kanna place in Singapore.
Yes.
That's accreditation.
Yes.
Okay, I've been vehemently told to stop talking, but we'll be back in a few more minutes. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.